Barra nin fuq campus 103.7 jena Colin Fitz. Ħanaq li bl-Ingliż bħal ma nagħmel passortu f'dal program. Welcome to Minajnejn Barra nin Malta through International Eyes. My guest today speaks perfect Maltese, but we're going to conduct the program in English because we have a lot of international listeners of this program and we should keep up the pattern, keep to the rule of speaking in English so as many people as possible around the world, not just here in Malta, will understand what we're talking about. We're looking at Malta through international eyes, the international eyes of Steve Healy. Welcome, Steve.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me on.
Welcome. You are Maltese.
I am, completely, 100%.
But you were born and spent some of your childhood in the UK.
So I was born in Germany.
Oh,
because my dad was in the Air Force. So my dad was in the
Royal
Air Force, and we travelled. We travelled around a lot. My dad and mum both Maltese, but he was posted in Germany at the time. So my mum and my brother and sister were there. I was born there. When I was two, they moved to the UK. Mm-hmm. Then I was in the UK till I was 10, and then when I was 10, my parents decided to come back to Malta, and that's when I came back.
And since then, you have also lived a long time in Malta. Then you lived for a period in the UK.
Yeah.
You've travelled a lot as well. You've visited some amazing countries, which we shall talk about.
Yep.
Places in Africa, in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
You've even spent quite a long time in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks, I mean.
A bit more than that, yeah.
A bit more than that,
yeah,
months.
Yeah.
Okay. But the reason I invited you on, apart from you are, you do have those foreign eyes that you can talk about.
Thank you very much.
Malta from an outside perspective. But you're also a stand-up comedian. You dabbled a bit in politics when you were younger, when you were a member of Alternativa Democratica.
Yeah.
You're one of those artists, one of those people who's always taking a step back to look at societies so that you can get material for your stand-up and for your writings and for your sketches.
Yeah.
So in that respect, I think you're a great guest to be able to take a look at Malta from these international
or foreign
eyes.
Well, I mean, that's what a comedian, the comedian's job is to look at a situation. It could be a personal situation. It could be about relationships. It could be about politics. It could be about a country. Could look at them and try to kind of dismantle the situation and then try to put it back together in a different way. So that's kind of what I do.
Indeed. And you even wrote a book about living or life in Malta.
Yes. It was
from that perspective.
It was called State of the Nation, and it was all about different aspects of being Maltese, from politics to the Eurovision, to the way that the Uwaya, that kind of that the way that the Maltese kind of will bend the rules but then get very offended if they think anyone else is cheating.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a fun book to write. I wrote it 2018, I think, so a few years ago. It was a very fun book to write, and I had a good time writing it. Yeah.
We're going to talk about this book a little bit more, but first, you mentioned 2018. We're recording this program in June of 2025, and it so happens that today, the first time this program is broadcast, on Saturday,
yes,
the 14th of June, this evening is a very special day in Steve Healy's life. So if you're listening to the show on the Sunday, during the Sunday repeat, or when it's been put online, then this bit is a bit irrelevant, but Steve is still going to describe it in his inimitable style, so you can still enjoy the fact that tonight, Steve, after many years of having dreadlocks, you're going to shave them all
off. They're off, they're going. Yeah.
What's the reason?
Well, I'm doing this for charity. So I am, lately I've become very interested in men's mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I think that men need to be talking a little bit more. I think I've seen some statistics that really kind of blew me away about men and taking their own lives and stuff like this. And it's something that I've kind of become quite passionate about. And so I thought a good way of getting people talking, like what I do is comedy, what I do is fun. So I thought, why not try to create an event, try to have some fun, but at the same time, whilst doing that, try to get people talking. And then this kind of snowballed. I was talking with some friends and it turned into, why don't I try to do something that might be a little bit significant? And we thought, yeah, let's get rid of the locks. Now, I know it's only hair. It's not a big deal. But it's kind of something that has been a part of my identity for a long time. And so there's also the metaphor of something that's been a big part of me and kind of moving on. And and kind of try to take control and try to evolve and hopefully that in itself can get people talking. I mean, it's a haircut at the end of the day, and there's only so many metaphors you can put on it. But that hopefully will get people talking. Well, the idea is we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to have a few laughs. People will laugh at my shiny head, and then we'll have a bit of a dance with you tonight.
Yes.
You're going to be there. Yeah, part of the action.
Part of the action. So it's Saturday night at a nightclub called Tigulio in St. Julian's here in Malta. And part of the night is you shaving your...
Yes.
Is somebody going to shave them off?
Yes,
or will you
my wife is doing it. Yes.
The dreadlocks, which you've had since you were...
Well, I've had dreadlocks since I've been 16, 17.
Wow.
But then I got rid of them. But the current ones I've had since 2007.
And now you're in your 40s. So.
And now I am,
they've been around a long time. Big part of your identity.
Yes, a friend of mine was wondered that if any bats will be released once I cut them. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Participating in the evening will be other stand-up comedians, friends of yours.
Some very good comedians. James Ryder is going to be there. Paige Bozantsev, who is an American living here in Malta.
I must invite her on the show.
You must, yes. She's very funny. Dan Schwierep, Ed Vassallo, and your kind self.
I'll be playing music afterwards. We'll be dancing.
Yeah, we're going to be having a bit of fun.
It's tonight.
The 14th of June, yes.
Today is the 14th of June. If you're listening on the repeat or online, I'm sorry, event has passed.
Yes.
But you can still give a contribution.
Yes, to kelimni.com.
Kelimni.com.
It's an organization here in Malta. It's an initiative. It is run by an organization called SOS Malta. It is an initiative for mental health, encouraging people to talk. And they do loads of campaigns to kind of break the stigma. And they've got lots of services available for people to chat.
Exactly. So every ticket bought for tonight's event, and you have to buy a ticket for
tonight,
there will be tickets at the door, so every cent will go to kelimni.com.
Yes.
If you're listening to the show after the event has passed, you'll have to see what Steve looks like now without his dreadlocks
on his
social media.
Yep.
And you can still, if you wish, give a contribution to kelimni.com and help raise awareness about mental health, particularly men.
Yeah, I mean, Kelimni obviously help everybody, but I'm very interested in men's mental health, and I feel like men are perhaps a little bit sidelined. Perhaps there's the idea that you have to man up, which is a horrible phrase, but there's this old idea of the macho guys who just kind of take it all on and don't really open up and stuff like that, and so I've learned about this, and it's kind of I've decided it would be nice to do something now.
Put a spotlight onto
it.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm not, like I say, it's a haircut, so it's not. But if we can get a few people talking, if we can get a little bit of money for these guys at Kelimni, it's a good thing to do.
Very good. So Steve Healy is my guest. This is Malta Through International Eyes. Let's go back to your book.
State of the Nation.
You could almost consider it a good companion piece to this program, because it looks at Malta and Malta's foibles from a comedian's point of view.
Yes.
And nobody can complain that, oh, you're a foreigner, go back to your country. How dare you? You've got these problems in your country too, because you're Maltese.
Well, you say nobody can complain. When I have spoken about stuff or even put little bits of the book online, people who know me and know my background, they've told me, you spent a quarter of your life abroad. How dare you? If you don't like it, go back. So I haven't got the... go back to your country exactly, but I've got little versions of that sometimes. Yes. Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
But tell us a couple of the chapters, a couple of the stories that you included. For example,
we had one chapter about the Eurovision, which I think is
the obsession with the Eurovision,
and how every year you know exactly all the steps, from hope and from the certainty that Malta's going to win it, 100% going to win it, like the hope and the patriotism, to the crushing disappointment when we don't win it, to people not really being able to believe. It's like the stages of grief almost, to people not being able to believe it, to kind of acceptance in the end, the way that how can Europe treat us like that when we obviously have the best song and then at the end, kind of, but next year we'll definitely win. And we seem to forget this cycle every year. And then every year we start again. And it's the same posts, the same opinions.
You can copy and
paste every year. and I think that's a... I mean, it's a very... I think 2018 was... It hadn't become, obviously every year we are very obsessed with this, but I think over the last few years we've become more and more obsessed. Like, like when we had Destiny song, and then this year we had Mirjana song, and everybody, those were the two times where everybody was sure that we were going to win, right? And
well, there was a lot more attention, to be fair, this year on the Malta entry than there has been for a long time.
Yeah, but then obviously when the final results were out and everybody was like,
for those who don't follow, I think we came 17th or something.
And then the comments on Facebook about how does Europe treat us like that? Why do we keep doing it? And then you realize if you follow these same people on Facebook next year, these are going to be the people who will be talking about how we're going to win it, right? So, I think that's quite an interesting journey to look at. There was obviously there's stuff about.
Getting services at offices, for example.
I was about to say that, about just how frustrating it is when you go to a government office and you try. Although, again, this was written in 2018, and to be fair, I was recently at a government office and things have kind of got a bit better. So
you can do a lot more online nowadays.
Yes, you can do a lot more online. But back then it was you have to call someone and they have to put you through and then you have to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And then suddenly somebody would just hang up. Like, what happened? So then you have to call again and then they'll put you through to the wrong person and then they'll huff at you. And these all come from personal experiences. So I remember once going to some office, having to do some payment for something and then asking the person at the counter if I'd done the right calculations for my payment, and the guy literally looking at me and swearing because now he had to do the calculation. All I did was ask him to double check that I gave him the right stuff that he had to do. And so this kind of led to that was the inspiration behind that chapter. There was a chapter about politics and about how when you criticize a political party, a lot of people, when they'll criticize a political party, but I think that if nobody knew who was actually in power, I think that would be a great experiment. If nobody knew who was in government, and you just asked people to comment on how is their life as it is, without knowing if their party is in power or is in opposition, then I think it would be a very interesting experiment to find out what people really think. And it became basically, I think it was a bit of therapy for me doing this book. So letting it all out. And it was a fun book to write. Yes.
So let's go back to your childhood, or rather your life story.
Okay.
You told us about your childhood. When did your family bring you to Malta?
When I was 10.
Then you spent between the age of 10,
10 till,
to...
till I was, well, till I... kind of till I got married. I mean, obviously I traveled a bit and sometimes I traveled long term, like traveled long term for 3 or 4 months, but really I was in Malta from the age of 10 till I got married when I was 28, I think I got married. So then got married and then me and my wife went to Cambodia for 6 months. We did some volunteer work there. We went to live in Namibia for a year. We did some volunteer work there. Mm-hmm. We went to live in Australia for about 6 or 7 months as well. But my wife wanted to move to London. So we came back to Malta kind of as a stopgap. The idea was we're in Malta just till we prepare to go to London. Mm-hmm. And we ended up being in Malta for 3-4 years. And then we moved to London. We were in London for 10 years. And we came back last year. We have a 3-year-old son. So we came back last year. And we're here now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll be here forever, but we are here now.
You've done okay in London, for example.
Right. Yes.
You got quite a lot of work on stage. You did your own shows.
I did, I performed like in the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yes, Australia as well.
The Fringe, and yeah, so I've done quite a lot. Yes.
Where do you feel home is?
That's really, somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago, where I'm from, somebody who I just recently met, and that we were.
Yes, this is always an interesting question.
When they say,
to
where are
guests.
You from? For me, it's a really difficult. I don't know how to answer that question because I'm not from where I was born. I have zero memory of Germany, where I was born.
Where you were born? Okay. Which city was it anyway?
It was very close to an Air Force base, mm-hmm. close to a place called Gütersloh, which is like even German people like that.
No. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't feel any connection to Germany. Mm-hmm. I feel a connection to the UK because I was there for my early childhood
and quite formative years.
Yeah, and now again, so even culturally, I feel very close.
And which city was this, or which town?
We were living around Oxford, so Oxfordshire.
Okay.
And so culturally, I'm quite close to that. But culturally...
And English humour ingrained itself in you
very much
as a child, didn't
very
it?
Much
in fact, 80s comedians like, for example, Rick Mayall, I know is one of your favourites.
Yeah, Rick Mayall and Alexei Sayle and all those guys.
So that sort of Blackadder type era is very much you,
Isn't it? It was very much, very, very...
But one step further, even I think your humor is very much influenced by the anarchic humor of there was a program called The Young Ones, wasn't there on British TV?
Yeah, so that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there was that, and then we came. But also culturally, I grew up in a very Maltese house, so we would eat Maltese food. We would, you know,
Would speak Maltese to each other.
Would speak Maltese to each other, but when we lived in England, English to us, because I think in their mind, my parents didn't think they were coming back, and then something happened and they changed their mind. They decided to come, but I think for a number of years they didn't think they were coming back. It was kind of this hybrid. So I think my mum never really felt at home in the UK and wanted to come back anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was this kind of... Then when I came to Malta when I was 10, I felt like a fish out of water. I
didn't, massive culture shock, wasn't it?
I did not speak Maltese. Mm. I went to a school, De La Salle, where all my schoolmates spoke Maltese. I felt very lonely for a few years. Mm-hmm. So that was very difficult. But then,
was there did you feel bullied? Or?
No, not bullied at all. Just excluded. I say excluded makes it feel mean, but I wasn't excluded
on purpose
in that way. It was just, I wasn't part... These were kids who'd known each other since kindergarten. And then I was just coming in. And I didn't know any of their Italian references. I didn't know. So they were all talking about the Italian TV they saw the night before.
I couldn't
understand any Italian. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they spoke...
This is
about,
the 80s generation.
Yeah, the 80s, 90s, they spoke about, they supported Italian football teams. I supported Everton. I felt a little bit of an outsider for a few years. Mm-hmm. By the time I became a teenager and went to sixth form, then I felt very much, very Maltese. So then I was...
Had you picked up the language as well?
I'd even did Maltese at university. So I felt I became very Maltese. My group of friends was growing more and more. And I was very kind of... I got a job on the radio and I felt...
Locally here, yes.
Yes. So
Capital Radio, XFM.
So I felt very much at home. I felt very much at home in Malta. Although still having kind of the foreign sensibilities, you know. So
when you say foreign sensibilities, what
so
do you mean?
For example, politics. Mm-hmm. So whereas even from a very young age, a lot of my friends would be following the political party that their parents were in or would want to go to. There was a general election, so they'd go to the mass meetings because it would be a big party. Mm-hmm. I never kind of had that. So
did they mystify you to some of these?
A little bit, but also
obsessions.
I kind of just went with what I in my mind told me that I clicked with and that I connected with, which was the Greens, Alternativa.
Mm-hmm. So
I ended up in Alternativa. So that
and also. In your, I'm filling in the gaps here because I happen to know you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and just for the benefit of our listeners, there's that social justice element to your character, which developed in your teens, I would assume.
Yeah, so I became very much like I
but do you think it developed because you felt a little bit excluded?
Possibly.
Not on purpose, but by your school friends?
Possibly, yeah, maybe, possibly. Also, because I came from the UK, so... I was more used to, even back then, a bit more, for example, of a multicultural society of people who maybe looked a little bit different.
Malta had none of that.
Malta, yeah.
Exactly.
So,
plus in the UK, you were exposed to perhaps, I think the 80s and 90s, there were, I don't know, the poll tax. Not all riots, but some of them were peaceful marches.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it was like against the bomb.
Yeah, I was
you know, the miners. Margaret Thatcher was a figure that was either loved or hated.
But that came from my love of comedy, of course. Like the Young Ones that you mentioned, that was very formative for me. The Young Ones were the show, and all the people who were on it were all comedians, but they were also very left-wing comedians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So In fact, one of them, Alexei Sayol, is still around now, and literally this week was doing little bits on TikTok where he would be doing a stupid dance and then stop the dance in the middle to explain Marxist theory and then carry on dancing. I used to think that sort of surreal stuff was okay. Very funny.
There was also Spitting Image.
There was Spitting Image, which again was very political. So
yes.
So I always liked the political element of comedy.
I see.
And so then... Once you break that down, it's because obviously they're trying to say something. They are being activists in their own way. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I kind of I got involved in that as well.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
So, so you've lived in Malta and then you went to live in the UK. Yeah. Was it hard to leave Malta and spend those 10 years in the UK, even though you were coming and going?
It was, because in Malta I could kind of establish myself. I was working on the radio. It was...
You were a big fish.
Yeah, I was a little bit, yeah.
At that point, you had you were unfortunate because you worked with a radio station that was quite popular.
Yes.
And you were one of the big names on the station. Yes, it was called Capital. You used to play 80s music at the time.
Yes, exactly.
And you used to organize parties and bring over artists from abroad. And Steve has told me stories of bringing Samantha Fox Sabrina Salerno to perform in Malta and having conversions with them. Like
it was lots of fun. And
his childhood.
We were just boys who were like literally was like a group of lads who were just living out a dream, running a radio station. It was amazing.
But then the station closed down, unfortunately.
Then the station closed down. I'd already left by then. I'd left and then the station closed down. So then making the move to a
London.
Big country where I didn't know anybody, of course, and I was you start. The comedy you start again, you realize that maybe the comedy scene, which was a very tiny, tiny scene in Malta, the stuff that you thought worked here didn't work abroad. The Maltese audience is much more forgiving than the London audience.
Yes, we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
In fact, you went there with the intention, of course, of making...
Of doing comedy,
Of doing comedy and maybe breaking into BBC panel
shows.
Well,
I wanted to do... My idea was to do live. So the favourite thing I like doing is doing clubs and working on the circuit, which I did. So, but it did take a little bit of a while to break through on that. But yes.
But talk a bit about, Maltese audiences... And there are differences in Maltese audiences, aren't there?
Of course.
Like there are different types of audiences here in Malta, or it's the same in the UK though. I mean, there are different types of audiences.
Of audiences everywhere, yes.
But okay, the different audiences you performed here in Malta,
I think,
and the ones in the UK, and maybe other countries as well.
Yeah, so I think that the audiences in Malta, for me at least, were a lot more forgiving. So. You do a joke, and even if the joke isn't brilliant, the joke is just kind of okay, then it still kind of works. You still get your reaction, etc. You go to the UK and you do a joke that is okay. The reaction you get is very, very different. So you need to be on top of your game all the time. So it's harder. Obviously, you're competing with lots and lots of other people, especially in a place like London. So it's very, very, very competitive.
Speaking of London,
one
of your favorite bands is Madness.
That is true.
Shall we play something by Madness, or would you like to choose some other track?
Madness is awesome, yes.
Or maybe, I don't know, The Specials or The Beat or one of the other bands.
I love all of those bands. I love ska music. So my big regret in my life is that I've never been in a ska band. But
you have produced a couple of tracks.
I have done a couple of songs, yes, but I've never been in a band. Again, the
are they on YouTube?
Live. They are, yes, they are on YouTube. Look up Baron Bubble Beef.
Baron Bubble Beef.
She never seems to mind when I get drunk with the lads. It doesn't matter if I come back home smelling of fags. No big deal that I play Xbox for hours. She never says a thing because I never buy a flask. She wouldn't make me sit and watch a stupid chick flick. Or ask why it's a corner and not a goal kick. She never even moans when I drink beer in bed. And the reason's really simple, you see Jennifer's dead.
Madness would be awesome. Let's play something.
Let's have some Madness and take a break from our chat. This is Steve Healy on Min Ainain Baranin, Malta through International Eyes on Campus 103.7 with me, Colin Fitz.
Nasty schools, headmasters breaking all the rules, having fun and playing fools, smashing up the
103.7. We had some Madness there, one of Steve Healy's favourite bands.
Yep.
Now, we'll just remind our listeners that if you're listening on the Saturday, 14th of June, tonight, Steve is going to shave his famous dreadlocks charity.
I am, yes.
At an event at Tugulio, where every single cent will go for kellimni.com.
That's right.
So that's tonight. Find out more from Steve's social media pages, yep. Steve Healy. If you're listening on the Sunday, the repeat, or online, then the event would have passed. But the dreadlocks, the whole reggae thing, the whole being Steve Healy.
Yeah.
A few, you know, when you decided to go for the dreadlocks, it was around sixth form time. I mean, there aren't that many people in Malta who have dreadlocks.
Back then, there were less.
Nowadays, it's much more of a multicultural and multicolored society.
Yeah.
But you've always worn bright clothing and the yellow and the red. Even when you married.
Yes.
And we have to mention your wife was Catherine Baldacchino, who I have interviewed in this series.
Yeah.
A few series ago, actually. So you can find the interview with Catherine Baldacchino on the Campus 103.7 website under the series Minainain Baranin. But she loves your style, obviously. That's why she married you.
Yeah, I hope so.
But most people must have found you a bit of a... something a bit exotic different. And strange and different. So.
Well, it's like I don't. When I was at sixth form, it would have been great if especially the girls found me exotic. They didn't. I remember being at sixth form also because obviously, yes, I love colours. I love bright colours. It's very weird today. I'm wearing a black T-shirt, which is not like me at all. But the only reason I am is because literally all my other clothes are in the wash. But I do love colours. I love bright colours, and I've always kind of been like that. Colors kind of make me happy. But again, when I was when you're like a teenager and you know, you're talking to different people. I remember once there was a girl who dumped me because of my clothes, because she was like she was like, I'm embarrassed to be seen out with you. Honestly, you're like we're splitting up because of cloth. And she said yes. So I suppose it's not for everyone, but I do have a particular style.
But you go one step further. I mean, you're not ashamed, not that you should be.
Yeah.
But I mean, whenever, for example, I've been in a play with you and we're asked to bring our own costumes. And Steve, can you bring a suit? I don't have one.
I do have one now, thanks to shows that we've been in, because I've been given one by our costume people. Mm. But I don't.
You never bother. Really, you never really.
Also, it's like I don't really have a reason to wear a suit. Like if I go for a business meeting, a suit would look weird on me, you know. So I don't really have a reason to. A funeral, I'll wear a black shirt,
mm-hmm.
And a wedding I'll wear. I've got like a green blazer. So I've got enough to get by. I don't think I need one.
Let me turn all these questions on their head. Has the way you look and the way you are,
yeah,
ever kept for? You mentioned business meetings for sponsorships things. Has it ever worked against you?
I'm sure it has.
It has.
I'm pretty sure it has. But I mean, I don't know what people say about me behind my back, so I don't know. But for example, I do know that I was talking to a particular media organization recently, and I do know that I did hear afterwards that one of the people at this media organization, even though I've got lots of experience doing and I've got a very good track record, they were still a little bit weary of me because of my image and my look, I thought was very unfair. But I suppose
because they think you're a loose cannon.
I suppose for some people my image, obviously I've worked for a long, obviously, I've worked for a long, long time creating an image and creating a persona that I can earn money with, and that also fits me. So if I'm doing comedy that is quite in your face, maybe a little bit naughty, if my clothes are kind of a little bit wild, that's something that reflects me and reflects a big part of me, but also is the persona I've created for comedy purposes. It's my business, it's my work.
Yeah.
Now that persona, obviously, is if anybody wants to work with me, that's the persona they need to work with. Behind that persona, as everybody who's ever worked with me knows, I think I'm a very hard worker. I work very hard, and I try to get results.
Eye for detail and everything.
Yeah. So there is, but that's kind of the boring business person underneath the persona. Not everybody gets to that business person, unfortunately. So that's it. Yeah.
Have you been performing and writing this kind of comedy, particularly in Malta, as a way of teasing people and giggling with glee at the fact that you've shocked a lot of people? Or is it just, it just comes naturally to you and you perform the same kind of thing abroad?
Yeah, I do. Well, I do perform the same kind of thing abroad. But the first shows I did, I wanted to write something that was weird and different. And I wanted to write something that was a bit naughty. And actually, the reason I did it was I wrote a Christmas pantomime here. The way it was directed, I was a little bit disappointed with.
One of the big ones, at the Manor Theatre.
Yeah. And I was a bit disappointed with it. And I thought, I tried to write it in a way which I thought was what my client wanted. And actually, I thought it was very good, but then whoever directed it didn't share my vision, and so in the end, I don't think they were happy. I wasn't that happy with it, and so then I was like, you know what? I want to do my own thing, and I want to do a pantomime with the jokes I like. So I'm going to make it an adult pantomime. It's just going to be for adults. And the first time I did it, there was quite a lot of me giggling at what I was getting away with, of course. But then I liked it, and audiences liked it, and it grew and grew and grew. And then you realize, well, okay, so I'm going to keep on doing it, not just because of the glee, but also because there's something here. Yes,
and okay,
it's different. I still laugh at what I get away with on stage, but that's part of the joy of doing it. Yeah.
You've also used the fact that you're Maltese and you are Maltese, although we discussed how you don't really
kind
feel
of weird, yeah,
anything, yeah, but you do use the Malteseness in your being,
yeah,
to your advantage. For example, I think you did a show abroad that was all about being raised in Catholic Malta.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that gives you fuel for your jokes.
You know, I think Malta is so
does it work?
Small. I think Malta is so small. It's not like being from Italy. There's not a big diaspora of people who will come to see your show because you're Maltese. A very good friend of mine, a very good Greek comedian, he does shows in Australia that are targeting the Greek community there.
Of course.
Like the second, third generation.
And also, like you mentioned, the Greek, there was that film, the Greek wedding thing, exactly, which was a hit all over the world, even amongst non-Greek people.
But that film would have worked if it was my big, fat Maltese.
His wedding? No.
I don't think there would have been enough of a... Like the first people to go see that would have been people who understand Greek and Greekness, and Greek... And Greekness means something to even people who are not Greek. I don't think Malteseness means anything to people
to the majority.
So I think we are a little
because
bit,
we're so small and we're
yeah,
so
I think we're a little
compared
bit too small.
To,
so
yeah.
So I think that is so. I don't use necessarily. I talk about being Maltese, but I don't necessarily use it very much. I mean, I'm talking about growing up as a Catholic. Yes, that's something that more people, I feel, can relate to.
I see.
That gives a bigger audience.
But some of the things that you did use,
yes,
in your shows about growing up Maltese, could you mention a couple of them?
For example, growing up in it's Maltese, but it's about, for example, I've got jokes about
being made to go to church,
or knowing somebody, becoming your friend very early on in life, and then they're still your friend a lot later, even if that person. So you will go off on a separate world, but then that person still knows your family, still knows your mum, still knows, and even though you haven't seen him for 25 years, so your mum will be like, "I bumped into your friend today." It's like, who's my friend? So the what it's like to grow up in a small country where people know each other and everybody's kind of in each other's business as well.
So those are the kind of things.
Those are the kind of things, but
some of them are quite universal. For example, Mediterranean people.
Yes,
people from small countries.
Or people from small countries.
Or Catholics.
Yes, and I think there's a lot of that. I mean, there's also the idea of kind of trying to, you know, the stuff that is mentioned in the book, for example, how the Maltese might try to cheat a little bit in their daily life, like I don't know, getting around rules and stuff like
yes,
this.
Yes, so, which is also a Mediterranean thing.
We're
not beating
thing.
Upon us upon Malta,
but this is but I mean, for everything. Anything you talk about Malta, I don't know if there's anything that is uniquely Maltese in a way in which no other country can relate to. I don't know if there's anything that is uniquely from any country that no other country can relate to, you know? Yes, we're a small country. If you're from Ireland or Gibraltar, you're from a small country. Yes, we're a Mediterranean country like Sicily. Yes, we're Catholic like lots of places in the Mediterranean. I don't know if there's anything. Obviously, the mishmash and the particular mishmash makes it particularly Maltese. Mm-hmm. But for me, my job is to get an audience to relate to me. So I need to get little bits of it and then try to get people to relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you never went out there trying to make it big through the vehicle of being Maltese.
I know. I mean, I spoke to some people who are kind of agents, etc., who've worked with me, the management I have had.
Yes.
And it was always the suggestion that it's not a great idea. Like you mentioned it, I don't hide it at all, but trying to make it...
To build a persona.
To build a persona of being Maltese.
What I'm trying to get to here is the conversation that we've sometimes had about your admiration of the Australian fellow who, Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, yeah. Paul
who made Hogan, a whole, yes. who introduced Australian culture almost to the world through those two movies.
Yeah.
And you had the idea
I had a few years ago.
To do something similar with Maltese.
I thought it would be a great idea to get someone, obviously like me, because that was the whole point. Get someone like me and to create a campaign for people to come to visit Malta, a very tongue-in-cheek campaign.
Because that's how Crocodile Dundee started.
Before Crocodile Dundee, Paul Hogan and his production team, they created a number of adverts about Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I might be getting the details wrong, but I think what they did was his production company actually created them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they actually offered them to the Australian government or something for free. I might be getting this wrong. And then these were all aired in America as a way of advertising Australia
come to
the
Australia.
American market.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, he did a movie and he was the guy who was on TV all the time.
In the adverts.
And the movie became massive. And I thought, what a great idea. Something maybe we could do here in Malta. So I did speak to some people. Coincidentally, like literally this week, I found an old email that I sent to a production company with an idea for a script for this thing.
Yeah.
People obviously were very busy or maybe didn't share my enthusiasm for the project and nothing ever happened. But I thought that was a great idea.
But the way you're talking to me now is that maybe you, let's say people did cooperate with you and you did produce a bunch of ads.
Yeah.
It won't have the same impact as, for example, the Crocodile Dundee ones,
because
we don't have enough uniqueness. Maybe.
I think there is a uniqueness to sell. I mean, I think what I was saying before was that I need people to when I'm doing stand-up set, I need people to relate to me. So if I'm going to talk about being a Catholic boy from a small country, I can talk about that in relation to Malta. But my emphasis needs to be, I need you to relate to me because it's about being a Catholic, or I need that person to relate to me because it's about coming from a small country. Otherwise, if they don't understand what I'm talking about, then they're not going to laugh. My emphasis needs to be on things that an audience can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I never hide that I'm Maltese. I talk about being Maltese, but my emphasis is on the stuff that people can relate to. If I'm talking, if I can talk about, I don't know, the kind of the not dodgy, because I don't like that word, but the idea of what we said about people who maybe try to cheat a little bit in their daily life.
Cheat the system, yeah.
Cheat the system a little bit. So that is also something that maybe certain people can relate to. But
indeed.
But that's the emphasis, not Malta, what we have in Malta, because then people who have never been here kind of relate to that. But I never hide that I'm Maltese. Mm-hmm. And all those, that mishmash of things together is the Malteseness that I thought perhaps we could sell by doing this, these sorts of adverts.
Being Maltese, though, has its advantages when it comes to, for example, you are very proud of the fact that you're the first and probably only Maltese who has performed in Australia.
Was it the Comedy Store?
The Comedy Store, sorry.
I was the first and, as far as I know, only Maltese person to do a one-hour special in the West End in London. So I've done a
So when you come back to Malta, or when you, I mean, that is a positive. Being able to be the first amongst these 500,000 people.
Yes, it definitely is. And I'm not everybody can say they're the only person from their country to have done something. Mm. That's a great positive. Yeah,
you are proud of those achievements, aren't you?
Of course,
yes.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about what they were like.
So the West End show was a show that I did. I'd written a whole show about about environmentalism actually, and I did the show, and it was really good. The thing is, it happened around the same time as COVID. And so COVID kind of stopped in its tracks, and I was very proud of that show. It was the show that got me an agent. It was the show that, like, so I did it in a venue in the West End, and a bigger venue actually approached me to do it in a bigger venue. There's not a lot of places in the West End that actually do stand up. Like, you have comedy clubs, but this was a theater. They approached me, and then COVID happened and it didn't happen. So that was something that it also proves to myself that, okay, I can do it. And this was, I'd been in the UK by now for about 4 or 5 years, which isn't a long time to establish yourself in the, and I thought, okay, wow, something is happening. COVID kind of killed all that in its tracks. And then what happened with the Comedy Store was, again, then through my agent, I got a short gig at the Comedy Store in Sydney, because I was doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival, so I went to Sydney first. I got a short gig, it went well, so they asked me back, and then that's kind of how it works. And I obviously got a much longer gig, and then I did two weeks there, which was one of the best comedy clubs in the world. So it was awesome.
Nice, yeah. Well done. Another first, or another unique thing for perhaps a Maltese person, is that something you did quite recently with one of your favorite football team, Everton.
Yes, you got
to play at their stadium.
Yeah, I mean, the only negative there was that there was these hooligans in the stadium who were yelling out these obscenities in Maltese. It was horrible. It was terrible.
Every time you touched the ball.
Every time I touched the ball. So not a lot, actually, only maybe twice.
You mean
three
you
times.
Had Maltese friends watching you?
Yeah, so what happened was there was a competition. So I'm a big Everton fan, and there was a big competition.
Can I just stop you for a second? Yeah. You didn't even live in Liverpool.
No, I didn't.
You were a Maltese kid living in the UK, even though you were a British kid.
But I didn't have, so my dad.
How did you end up?
My dad was kind of interested in football, but not really.
Yeah.
So he watched the World Cup, but it was very, so he didn't have a team.
Because
so,
you're not just an Everton fan, you're a hardcore Everton fan.
He
get upset when they lose.
Yeah, I do. So he didn't have a team. And so I wanted to get involved in football. I was very young. There was the World Cup on. There was Gary Lineker, who was England's top scorer in that World Cup. And I asked my dad who he played for. My dad said he played for Everton. Oh. I said, okay, I'll start supporting Everton. And literally 1 week later, he joined Barcelona, Gary Lineker, like 1 week later. And I told my dad, what should I do? What should I do? I've started supporting Everton. My dad said, you can't really change clubs. Once you've started supporting a team, then that's your team. And I'm like, oh, okay. And and so from then on, I started supporting Everton. And it became bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Had I got into football 1 week later, I'd support Barcelona. It would be, you know, much nicer going to Barcelona to see games, actually seeing your team win trophies. It would be awesome. But
recently, in 2025, you ended up going to Goodison Park.
I did. Since I've had a kid, weirdly, I've become more obsessed with Everton, and I don't know. I think it might be something it's something I share with my son, and it's something I really want to pass on to him. So I've become a little bit more obsessed. This was the season where they left Goodison Park, so they left Goodison Park at the end of this season that has just finished in May, and they're moving to a new stadium, and so they had a bit of a competition for fans around the world to. Well, it was this competition where you could play in Goodison Park before the men's team leave. At the time when the competition was being advertised, nobody knew that the women's team was going to take over. So everybody thought that the ground was just going to be demolished. But so there was this competition, and it was a competition where you had to send in yourself showing off a footballing skill. I have no footballing skills, but I sent in a video which I thought was quite funny. They agreed it was funny. I got chosen. And,
so you didn't get chosen because you were the Maltese fan or anything?
No. So apparently they had thousands of entries.
Mm.
And I
you got chosen, and they chose about 30, you know, 15 against 15?
Yeah, so there was 15, so it was 11 players and 4 subs, and I got chosen. And so I was one of the last men to play at Goodison Park, which was
amazing.
It was awesome. Yeah.
But the Maltese thing had nothing.
The Maltese thing had nothing to do with it. No. It was just you could have a plus one with you.
Yeah.
I had a plus two. I had two Maltese friends. We had a little road trip, and so they came along with me, and so they were there watching the game.
They gave you the number 9, and you got to meet the important ex-players.
I got to meet George Jagielka, who's an old. Yeah. He actually played for England as well, and yeah, so it was a really, really great day.
A lovely story to tell your kid and your grandkids.
Yeah,
well,
it's amazing. I still have the shirt, obviously, with Healy and the number 9 at the back.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's going up on the wall, and some good photos. Yeah, great day.
So a number of firsts that Steve Healy has achieved in his life over the years. You also, as you mentioned earlier on, but we don't have time to go into much detail.
Okay.
About spending months doing voluntary work.
Yeah.
In places like
Cambodia,
Namibia.
Yeah, yeah.
Your wife, Catherine, spoke about those experiences in the episode when I interviewed her a few months ago. So that program is on the website. So maybe you can listen to that to hear about those experiences. But maybe just in a couple of sentences.
They were really interesting. They were things that I've never done anything like that. I'd never done anything like that before or since. So very intense kind of volunteer work. And it does open your eyes to working with people who are different, living in different cultures. Me and my wife had literally just got married. And so we got married in 2007, and we went off to Cambodia in 2008. And it was a very intense time. But now we look back, we think, wow, we were living the dream. Like so many people, like honestly, I remember at one point it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the office where we were working in Cambodia was closed, and they said to just, or we didn't have electricity or something. They said, just go up to your room. We lived on the premises. Go up to your room and we'll call you back down when the electricity. So we went up to our room, and like literally we had no money, right? So we went up to our room, just me and my wife, kind of newlyweds. We had a very special cuddle all that afternoon, and we thought, you know what, we're the richest people in the world. Like, who can just do this and just live there? It was awesome. So we look back now, we think, brilliant, amazing.
Steve, you also worked on the radio. Was that in London?
I've worked on the radio here in Malta.
Yes.
I worked on the radio in Australia, SBS. I've worked at Colourful Radio in the UK as well. So I've worked...
Colourful Radio?
Yeah, I've worked at a few different stations. Yeah.
That was a station so for that was various...
a station. That was a station in... I did the breakfast show there for a year.
Oh, wow.
And it was a station that focused on... focused on urban music, so there was lots of reggae, hip hop, stuff like that, sort of music that I love. So I worked there for a year. It was brilliant. So I was doing them, and their studio was at the Oval Cricket Ground. So it was. So I'd literally just get the tube, go to the Oval, and just be doing my show from there.
You've had quite a number of amazing, interesting experiences.
Life. I have. Yes.
I have to stop myself saying for a Maltese, but there are plenty of Maltese who have done amazing things and traveled the world and everything. Long gone is the time when we Maltese were kind of just stuck here in Malta, apart from those people who immigrated. What's the future like? What do you think the future is going to be like for you?
I think I'm going to have a very cold head from from tonight. So, the immediate future is I'm off to South Africa for a bit of a trip with my wife and my kids. So that'll be fun. I am working on a new stand-up show, which is very exciting. I've got a stand-up tour coming up later on this year, 2025. I've got a few different shows. I've got a few different ideas. I'm working on a podcast. So there's a few different things happening.
We have to mention that you have done some podcasts recently, which have been quite popular. Yeah, called...
What is the Multiverse?
Multiverse. But spelled M-A-L-T-I.
So there's the Maltese-ness in it. So the idea is that we talk about the foibles, to use one of your terms, the foibles of being Maltese. It's very funny.
Jason Zamit. Jason Zamit, yeah.
And so it's very funny.
Maltese-Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Very, very funny. Very silly show. And very popular as well. So we... with season 3 of that is coming up in October.
And you had another podcast, didn't
you? I've had a few different ones, but one that I used to work on as well was called Horn Fessions, which was a podcast where people would send in their naughty confessions, and me and fellow comedians would kind of go through them and give them very bad advice. And again, I try to design my life so that the stuff I do is fun and if possible, silly. And if I can get people to give me money for being fun and silly, then that's a win.
Well, good luck in South Africa. Your next trip abroad.
It's just a trip. It's just having a bit of fun. Yeah.
And then Australia.
And then Australia later on in the year. That's the plan. Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Well. I hope we don't lose you to another country. I hope you stay with us for a long time. You never know.
That's up in the air. Yes. Who knows?
Yes. Last two things, Steve, to conclude this edition of Minainain Baranin, Malta Through International Eyes on Campus 103.7 with me, Colin Fitz, my guest, Steve Healy. Two things. The things that you wish could be better about Malta and the things that are the best things about Malta. Let's start with the things you wish could be better. And I'm going to quote you.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Because I've done my research and also I've racked my brains.
Okay.
And one thing that had struck me once when you said about certain types of architecture and the way certain buildings are designed here in Malta or even open spaces where you're meant to relax.
Yeah.
And I quote you saying... There isn't a joy in the way things are, in the way certain things are done here, lack joy.
Yes.
Which I thought was a wonderful way to describe a negative thing.
Yeah.
Eyes, in the way you see it.
That is, that's something that it's very weird that you should mention architecture. I don't think anyone's ever quoted my thoughts on architecture before.
I think it's
something that is shown in lots of different ways. Architecture is just one way, but I think sometimes in Malta we do lack a joy. So it's very rare for somebody to do something for the joy of it. So the first question they ask, or the first question a lot of people I know ask, is, "Yeah, but how much money are you going to earn from that? But is it worth it?
Negative.
Yeah, and the joy of actually doing something for the joy of it, I think, is lost. And I think. I don't know if that has anything to do with our educational system. I don't know if it's a hang-up from being a former colony, and maybe our great-granddads and great-grandmothers had to fight
for
everything. So the idea of actually doing something for joy is... So something that actually a very good friend of mine and yours, Malcolm Gaglia, once said was, and this really hit me, was that in English, if something is... In English, you would call someone sad. That's kind of an insult, but it's kind of a, oh, wow, that's sad. But in Maltese, the equivalent is how happy that person is.
The word Ferhad is happy.
It's almost an insult.
Exactly.
Shint Ferhad, which means how happy you are. Like, it's almost an insult. And that kind of, I think that ties into perhaps in the Maltese psyche sometimes. And again, not everybody, but...
Joyfulness is not something to be proud of.
Yeah, there does something to be a lack of joy in living spaces and everything. And I think maybe if we could try to, and I don't know how, but if we could try to embrace more joy, life would be a bit nicer.
And the wonderful things that you take with you when you're abroad.
Hospitality is literally it's my favourite thing in the world. But not only, but even like my kid this morning, we're walking to school, and he's walking to school, and he's waving at people, and he knows people. And there's still in Malta a nice sense of community, which obviously there is a sense of community in many places, but the Maltese sense of community is, I don't know, it feels very special to me, and so that idea of kind of people knowing each other, people kind of, you know, I like that. I do like that sense of community. Yeah.
That's a lovely way to end this edition of Minayna in Baranin, Malta Through International Eyes on Campus 103.7. Very quickly, I'll remind you, if you're listening on the Saturday, the 14th of June, tonight Steve is going to shave all his dreadlocks off.
Leave a couple at the back.
Yes. It's all for charity, for mental health charities.
Yes.
It's at Tigulio tonight. Find out more from Steve Healy's social media.
Yep.
Do turn up tomorrow. If you're listening on the repeat Sunday or online, this event has already happened. Thank you, Steve, for being my guest.
Thank you very much.
And I wish you the best for all your future endeavors.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back.